Hello, everyone. Welcome to Spoiler Alert, a weekly talk radio show for movie and television lovers. We are on the second week of March Calmness, a clap back to March Madness, where we watch a bunch of work of a particular artist, but instead of pitting them against each other, we just discuss them languidly. This month, we're delving into the works of Ang Lee, a title of which is forever evolving. We usually do something really punny, maybe Ang Tight Lee.
I don't know.
Last week we looked at early careers of Ang Lee, and now we're firmly in the middle section, which is his Oscar era baby, but I cannot do it alone. I wish I could quit them. It's Sonia Stanger and Jeremy Legui. Hi, guys.
Well, howdy.
Sonia, you were just, as we know, the title is Confounding Evolving. Mm-hmm. What was your suggestion? You had one that you popped on today.
Well, people who
could you repeat yours?
People who listened last week may remember that I had a small mental breakdown trying to come up with puns. And I thought of one after the show last week that I texted to you guys, which is Ain't Nothing. Oh no, I forgot it. Ain't nothing but a Lee thing. Ain't nothing.
Ain't nothing but a Lee thing. I think it's brilliant. Like, I think it's actually some of your best work.
And you're
the
on
fact
top.
That you don't want to pursue it is blowing.
You're on
my
top
mind.
Of your game.
Well, I think this is like a good representation of my imposter syndrome and how I actually can't be trusted about the quality of my own ideas. So that's why I bring them to you guys to evaluate.
Mm. Mm. So. I also like the idea that maybe the title is never firmly landed on.
We get is.
A ton of insane suggestions.
It sort of fits the vibe, I feel.
What happens.
The meandering vibe.
I think so.
You guys, April. Happy April Fool's Day.
Lol, whoa. April Fool's, it's March Madness.
Did you get completely lulled today? Completely goofed and punked?
Well, airing my truth, I maybe slept till noon today.
Oh, that's when all the good pranking happens.
So
you slept through it.
Over at noon.
The only thing I saw was someone doing like a bit about cheese.
Oh.
Where they were like rating a type of cheese, but it was a Kraft single.
Mm. Mm.
And that's really all I got. Yeah. That's it. That's all.
Pretty
I got.
Good stuff. Yeah.
I got by my Spotify DJ.
He was like,
oh, I really appreciate being your DJ all these years, and I want to play you a song that speaks to everything that I've been wanting to say to you. And then it was just like a dumb yodely song.
And
he's like, just
really
kidding.
Showed you.
I know. I was like, what is going on? And then I was like, my DJ pranked me.
Singularity comes nearer with every day.
Right? So me and my DJ had a great laugh together.
You know, you guys, I never thought the DJs would turn on us. You know, I never actually thought that would. It just never crossed my mind until this very moment, actually.
Those are the ones I'd be so scared to turn on.
Because they know so much.
They're in control. They're in control of my mood. They know everything about me.
I gotta use the DJ function. I never use it.
Sometimes he hits so hard, and then sometimes you're like, it's like you've barely known me, sir.
That's so funny.
It's like you're not even a person listening to me, sir. Okay, let's get into Ang. So I would say this is Ang's most popular era, this mm-hmm. one that we are
yes.
in. This is when he starts popping off.
Off
and,
on me.
And I would say for good reason, because as I said earlier, Ang completely snaps on this decade.
May I just say,
yes.
Like I am looking at the list of things we are talking about.
Yes.
And like smack dab in the middle is Hulk.
Okay, do you know what's so funny?
It hurts me to see that there.
Yeah, we might need to talk about Hulk next week.
Yeah, we probably will, but
it's so funny because I was reading today that so Ang Lee was offered to direct Brokeback Mountain, and he turned it down because he's like, no, I want to make Hulk instead. And then he did. And then several years later, they offered it back to him, and he's like, let me try it again.
Oh my God, can you imagine?
Isn't that outrageous?
It would not be what it is without him.
Wait, are we talking about the Hulk?
Both.
No, I'm not ever going to talk about the Hulk.
It was a smash. Actually,
maybe next week nice. I will be, but...
Thank you.
Nice.
It was huge!
It had no shirt on. Oh, wait. It ripped his shirt.
Why was he up there?
It was busting out. I don't know anything more about Hulk.
Yeah, I'm like, green?
It was green. Okay. Let's get into these. We don't have a lot of time.
No, you're right.
Let's go.
Let's do it.
Should we start earliest?
Yeah, should we go chronologe?
Let's do chronologe.
That's a word that people shorten, right?
Does
that maybe make sense for me to intro this one?
I know you're begging to.
Jump into the chronologue?
Yeah.
Sonia, please begin at the chronologue and chronologue driver's waltz and you do it.
This is a film from 1995 that is personally somewhat important to me as a nerd and a woman, as a female nerd.
Okay. Your identifications.
Yeah. Also, I misgender myself sometimes. As a woman? Question mark? As a woman? Woman asterisk?
The question mark is canon.
Yeah, the question mark is canon. Anytime I refer to myself as a woman, please know there's an asterisk / question mark.
It's on her passport.
Yeah, thank you. This is 1995, Sense and Sensibility, an adaptation of the Jane Austen novel of the same name. Arguably one of the best and most critically acclaimed Austen adaptations. I just think it's so fun and delightful that he was chosen to direct this film.
Mm-hmm.
It feels incongruous somewhat, but his style, I think, really, really works for it. So this adaptation was written by Emma Thompson, actually, who stars as one of the two main characters, Eleanor Dashwood.
As an aside, how many times is someone adapting a screenplay and then also starring in the film?
Not often.
Not a dang ton.
She is actually, I don't know if she is still, she was at least at one point, the only person to ever have won an Oscar for both acting and screenwriting. So that's very slay of her. They, I guess, decided to bring him on because they thought that he would bring some, like, notoriety and acclaim, which I think is interesting. Like, that to me makes me reconsider, like, how big his first three movies were. Like, I guess I didn't realize how widely known they must have been for them to make that kind of call.
Yeah, because they said that the Wedding Banquet, they were like, oh, he'll understand this entirely.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm like, people knew about the Wedding Banquet?
But also, well, like, it was just I think there is I want to say Hollywood, but I'm actually going to say, like, English-speaking sphere of movie making that I think is, like, making it big. Which makes no sense, because, like, Bollywood's huge, and Chinese film is huge, right? Like, all these... But there is, like, this, like, idea that once you're into, like, English features...
Yeah,
that
you've made it,
right? And so, I do, like... So, like, I'm just looking at the list, and it's literally like Pushing Hands, Wedding Banquet, Eat, Drink, Man, Woman, Sense and Sensibility.
Yeah.
So I do feel like it's like, oh, he's proven himself. He can direct. He is a capable director. Now we'll bring in the new kid.
But, like, I read an interview with the producer who helped adapt it and, like, get it going. And, like, she explicitly said that he was brought on because they thought that he would bring, like, an audience with him, which I thought was really curious and interesting. Anyway.
Maybe he has a big Taiwanese audience.
Yeah, I don't know. It's the story of two sisters, Eleanor and Marianne Dashwood. One is sensible, or in the sense that we kind of know it today. One experiences a great deal of sensibility, which we might translate to sensitivity. And so it's sort of as most of Jane Austen's novels, it's a, like, kind of coming into self, coming of age novel for its two heroines, who are sort of learning each to be more like each other through their sort of love journeys. I'm so curious what you guys thought of this film. I'm so excited to talk about it.
Yes. Well, how should we start? I guess, yeah, so I guess I was struck by how Ang Lee has such a great sense of humor, and I know that he does from the past films, but just that he really imbued this with just, like, he understood the sort of silliness of, like, social hierarchy and repressions and things like that, which I think is, like, kind of speaks to his experience of living in Taiwan, of just like knowing about the inner workings of social like hierarchies and stuff like that, which is maybe why they were like, could be good.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think that's true.
And just also broadly, it is the setting, the costumes, so sumptuous. All of the cast is obviously slaying extremely hard. Not a flop in the bunch.
Emma Thompson, Kate Winslet, Hugh Grant, Alan Rickman. So, like, a real British who's who.
But then even in all the secondaries, like, oh, we got Imelda Staunton, we got Hugh Laurie in amazing little... Those two are... He's so funny. Yeah.
Jared, what did you think?
More than six at this point, but a bunch of Ang Lee films deep, I do think that his thing is about expectations, social expectations.
Yeah. Great.
Because that is, like, that is the threat, right? Yeah. Like, that is easily the thing that... And I think, like, I think a part of it is that, like, we get all these different circumstances. Like, we have three very different ones today, and they are all kind of, like, teasing out the same sort of things. You know, some more funny or some more actiony or what, you know, what have you.
Mm-hmm.
I am frustrated that we hear so much about Pride and Prejudice with this absolute banger in existence. Because it is like, I think it's not as beautiful as Pride and Prejudice. Like, it's not like, it doesn't look as good. But like, that's cameras.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's literally nothing other than that.
But it's also we're all poor. We're poor ladies.
Maybe.
Our houses are drab.
Got so drab.
Our wigs are insane, talking to you, Kate Winslet.
Because their brother didn't give them any money.
I know. Yeah,
such an awkward... And it's such a good opening, too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
They're just, like, discussing the money down.
The wife? I don't know who plays the wife. She is so funny.
She's so
funny. Fanny. Yeah. Fanny, you're a real one. You're iconic.
When she basically attacks that woman, when she says that she's into the brother, and she just like...
After that huge lead-up of like, I won't overreact. Yeah. I will not. She's just like, snaps.
Love and her. He nails the Austin vibe of that. That like, it's like social satire... It's kind of lampooning these almost like exaggerated characters, but then also is so like grounded, and you're like, I know people exactly like that. Like, I don't know. I just think he nails it. Sorry, Jerry. You were saying something.
It's just so wild too, because it's like he said he didn't even have that much of a connection to any Jane Austen. He was like, I don't know what this is about. It's just like a great lightning in a bottle of Emma Thompson's like innate understanding and script, and then him sort of like filtering it through that.
Yeah, because she did She did a lot of work to like consider what, like how the audience would connect to it. Like she made some changes in terms of like, especially the two love interests and kind of their characters and just a few things to make it a little more accessible that I think are so smart. But then, yeah, I guess he came in and said, he showed them a couple of period films and was like, this is not what we're doing here. Like, we are not focused on making this a, like, accurate historical time and place. We are interested in the, like, feelings and the realities of the characters. And I think that's why it works so well.
And there were a few times, like, I don't know a ton about Regency. But just, like, is this a thing that's allowed? Can they do this? Is this a... It's like, oh, no, they wouldn't, you know, they would never do this. But, I also think that, like, there is some I don't know if people can be good at directing people in the rain, but I think Ang Lee is that.
Yeah.
Well, I think that Kate Winslet just feels her best when she's soaking wet. That's when she says, I'll be acting my best.
Just gonna get a fever.
She's like, I can hold my breath for 12 minutes. Remember that?
I was like, don't forget. She's had to actually really take that to extremes.
I actually was annoyed by Marianne because she suffers from what I think of as like Frodo syndrome, where she just like every 5 minutes she is fainting, falling down.
Main character like, syndrome a little bit.
Like everyone is just like, hey, do you want to stop standing in the rain? She's like, yeah, definitely. Runs outside, stands in the rain, passes out again.
Gets a fever.
And everyone's like, oh my God, I can't believe Marianne fell down in the rain. And it's like, that's her thing. She actually is obsessed with it.
She's done it several times already. You actually have like a catchphrase about her never saying it's going to rain and then it does.
Yeah.
So there's all of these things that sort of, you know, hark to the fact that maybe she shouldn't go out in the rain.
Like, let's invest in an umbrella.
A little tidbit for you guys. When Austin originally wrote this novel in the 1810s, it's actually Eleanor that the reader is supposed to think, like, needs fixing because she's too, like, restrained and reserved. So I think that's really interesting from a modern standpoint where we're like, okay, Marianne,
you're on one. Yeah. That is actually really funny.
Yeah. But, it's both.
But I see it, right? Yeah, because, well, so each sister does their own thing, you know? Like, and I think Emma Thompson does a really good job. Like, they made a really good decision about her kind of, like, freaking out right at the end and getting super emotional just because, like, the whole time she's just, like, keeping it together.
She's after, like, I have wave no, after wave no of sensitivities.
Oh, well, it's true. But
and did they age her up right? She was supposed to be, like, 19, maybe?
Right. Yeah, they're
really.
Yeah, Marianne's which is also like, to be I like think 18, and Eleanor's like 22 or something, which is like basically dead.
Yeah, it's like okay, spinster.
Like, yeah, why? She's giving spinster. I just wanted to read you guys one thing from the Wikipedia page that I thought was so interesting and funny. Lee found that in contrast to Chinese cinema, he had to dissuade many of the actors from using a quote very stagey, very English tradition. Instead of just being observed like a human being and getting sympathy, they feel they have to do things. They have to carry the movie. And then he goes on to talk about how, like, Hugh Grant in particular was so much that. And I just thought that was really interesting and sort of captures, like, what he's doing with his films of just, like, being with other humans and exploring the ways they feel and, like, the things they go through. And yeah, I don't know. I just think there's something in that idea of, like, just being observed like a human being and getting sympathy. And that that's something we're not good at in the Western world. Anyway.
Yeah, you have to, like, show something going bad for you. Yeah. Jeremy, did I interrupt you earlier?
I have no idea.
Okay, I'm so sorry.
I think we maybe both did.
I feel like we talk over ourselves. I interrupted myself probably at one point.
Wouldn't it have been great if our main character from the Father Knows Best trilogy played Mrs. Dashwood or something? Just snuck in as a little,
Or Mr. Palmer, honestly, he could have slayed that.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, and also we should. So as we said, we're in Oscar era. This was nominated for like Best Picture of 1996. And got nominated for acting, cinematography, costume, score. All these things are great. All these things are also in Ang Lee's wheelhouse. I feel like those pop up all the time. Yeah.
I will note that it did lose to Braveheart. Which, is that right? Yeah. Which I get.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I believe Apollo 13. So, like, great year.
Yeah.
Great year. But, like, Braveheart?
Yeah. Different approach to historical texts, I'll tell you that.
Maybe.
Tell you that.
I don't think he got sick in the rain, but whatever.
Yeah, he was out in the rain all the damn time.
What a deserve.
Come on.
Should we move on down 5 years in the future?
We better.
We can.
Jeremy, do you want to talk about CTHD?
I can. I've never referred to that.
CTHD, I love it.
But of course, CTHD We're talking about Crouching Tiger, comma, Hidden Dragon.
Oh, yeah. That's how I feel about it.
Oh, obviously. But this is from 2000. I don't know why I still feel like things made in the 2000s are from the future, but yeah. I definitely do.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. This movie stars two of my favorite action heroes from other things. And the fact that Chow Yun-Fat didn't shoot anybody kind of still angers me, but that's okay. I understand why. But Chow Yun-Fat and Michelle Yeoh play, I don't know what to call them.
Star-crossed lovers slash...
Star-crossed.
Again, yeah, I was focused more on the occupation.
She runs a private security firm.
They're like bodyguards, security.
Yeah. Yes.
They're warriors.
But he's just like a notable fighter. Like that's his thing. Anyway.
Notable hairline weirdo.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's ready to literally hang up a sword, which we later learn is to be with Michelle Yeoh's character. And he asked her to take it to a guy in town to be kind of like put to rest.
Yeah.
She does that. And then we find out that there is another, well, we find out about like a few characters, which spoiler alert might be the same characters.
Mm-hmm.
There's some nefarious stuff going on in town.
Absolutely.
The Jade Fox has arrived and, Chow Yun-Fat's Master Lee has to avenge his master. Mm-hmm. All of this is like very like, am I going to say stereotypical? Like, I feel like stereotypical, but it came from this.
I was going to say like, this is, this feels like the mold for a lot of things.
Yes. Well, I think it definitely is.
Yeah.
For sure.
Because it's wuxia. It's a genre of martial arts, like action fantasy from Asia. So, yeah, it's within the tropes for sure.
Yes. Anyway, we get what is basically a very Shakespearean exchange of finding out that this person's actually this person, finding out that this person's actually in town when they thought they were out of town, someone else stealing the sword. We get a very awkward flashback.
The flashback.
Depends who you ask.
Yes.
What are you talking about?
I like the flashback.
I'm just saying in terms of like an abrupt narrative.
Yeah.
Like it just like confused. Literally. Just like, anyway.
Let's just spend half an hour in the desert.
Yeah. We're just gonna switch up to another thing. I hope the listeners are familiar with Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
They must be. Our listeners know. Hope so.
I feel like this is a really weird mix of an Ang Lee movie with fight sequences that I don't know if he was super invested in or not.
Can I give you a brief answer?
Yeah.
I watched an interview with him today that was so interesting where he said he found it really challenging because he learned that you basically can't ask the actors to act when they're doing those kinds of fight scenes because it's so dangerous. And that was a struggle for him. He felt that there needed to be emotion. So I think you're probably a little bit right.
Yeah. And I felt like it was super evident in that, like, I didn't think the fight scenes were not at the Marvel level where it's just punching.
Yeah.
And like, we've forgotten why we're here. And they talk in between and there's always like some funny parts and some, you know, like less serious parts, I guess. But, this movie, of course, notorious for its wire work.
Yeah.
And there is sort of like a lot of flying and that sort of stuff going on. And then who plays Jen? Sonia, can you help me?
Do you have it? Zhang Ziyi.
Yes, thank you. See, that's why you're here, to help me. Anyway.
That's the only reason.
That's why.
But this film influenced House of Flying Daggers, which came later, starring her. And sort of like there just was like a big branch of like wire work martial arts movies that like kind of jumped off this.
There's a lot of influences later, I think.
Yeah.
Like the red.
I would describe it as flying. I think that's the. Anyway,
do you remember like at the time, you guys were children, toddlers, but in 2000, I remember, like, the biggest joke around was these floating flying scenes. Like, everyone had a satire of it. But they are so, like, everyone made thought they were dumb looking, but they are so visually singular. They're and so really cool. Beautiful. And it's like, sorry, what did you, why were y'all making fun of these? They look amazing.
Well, I think the thing is that like it comes packed with like the Jackie Chan sort of like expectation of what this thing is going to be. And this time around, I was thinking that he should have like gone the extra mile and they should have just danced. Like this is where like they should have just reinterpreted what that combat would look like.
It is a dance. Some of that choreo is insane.
Yeah.
Insane.
Yeah, but they still, I don't know. It's like, it's just, it was just so different to me. Like having these pockets of like the combat was interesting, but like, I felt like it almost didn't fit the character sometimes.
Mm.
I think Janet fit very well. Like, I think like the whole thing sort of framed around her character.
Yeah.
And like, it made sense with her like mask on, mask off situation. But again, Chow Yun Fat didn't even shoot anybody.
like the Michelle.
Did they even have guns yet? I think they just did.
No, not even. Not even a thing.
The Michelle Yeoh scene versus when Jen has like, oh, I've got the insane sword now,
and oh, yeah.
It's undefeatable, and she's just using every single piece of equipment possible. Is so comedic, but also incredible, like yeah. Physically. It's mm-hmm. That's such an amazing scene. And also the other scene that I was in, like very intrigued by was the restaurant scene where she, mm-hmm. you know, takes on an entire restaurant, which yeah. was very reminiscent of 3 years later, Kill Bill, where they do pretty much the exact same scene. She just takes on an entire restaurant of people.
Good point.
Isn't it? I was like, this looks exactly the same to me.
There's a direct line. Like, I thought of it immediately as well.
Anyway, Quentin, I didn't because I forgot. We got your number.
Yeah, we're coming for you, Quentin.
We're coming for you, Quinn. Quinn.
I'm gonna get my magic sword, my magic green sword, and then you're going to be done.
And also, our boy, our father, plays Sir Tay.
Oh, we saw him.
Who is that we're giving the sword to? He's yeah. great. I wish that he snuck him into every film now. Now I'm just looking for him. I wish he was a random guy in Brokeback Mountain.
Stunt driver, Brokeback Mountain.
Yeah, maybe he could have been the guy that's like bringing them their supplies or whatever.
They could have made it. They could have made it work.
Absolutely. Si-Hung
Leung is who we're talking about also.
Mm-hmm. Well, do we have anything, one quickie to say before break, or should we just go?
I'll just say one really quick thing that'll shake yes. everyone.
Oh my gosh.
This was my first time watching this movie, I think.
That is shocking.
I was so sure that I had watched it as a child, but I was watching it and I was like, I don't know her. This is incredible. This would have been my whole personality if I'd seen this.
Oh, absolutely. You think I wasn't using staffs and throwing things around when I was a kid.
Little baby Sean with a snap. I love it.
So slow. Okay, well, it's time for a word from our sponsors. Don't make like Jade Fox and lie dormant for 10 years because we'll be right back talking Ang Lee on 91.3 FM CJTR, Regina Community Radio, tuned into the community. And we're back on 91.3 FM CJTR, Regina Community Radio. We'll be back talking Ang Lee films in a minute after we play a little game, lovingly called The Game.
It's game time, people.
Whoa!
For those who do not know, or if you're just tuning in, The Game is where I spend, it was a fair amount of time. I've had to get strategic with this most recent sort of like pass with Ang Lee. Things are a little tight here. But I select a title related to our topic that these two have hopefully not seen. I tell them the title. They tell me what they think it's about. I tell them what it's really about. And we all have a great time. You guys, are you ready to play the game?
I'm ready.
Here we go. This week's title is Empty Diary. That title again, Empty Diary.
Jeremy, this is such a sad phrase.
Yeah.
Maybe.
It also makes me think of Harry Potter. I don't.
Basilisk tongue tusk.
Basilisk.
Okay. Well, I will start. Here's what I know is that it's not a feature film because we have eyes on Ang Lee. So what I'm feeling mm-hmm. like is that it's a short film from perhaps earlier in his career. And I believe that it is about, I think it's about a schoolgirl. I'm going to go in the slightly happier version of this, and just that she has no social life. She's such a nerd and doesn't really get out much and just studies, that her diary has nothing of nothing of import to even write in it. So it's completely empty. She just is like, well, what am I going to do? Did the same thing that I always do. Not going to write in it.
Ate some noodles, did my homework.
Yeah. Until, of course, she meets some sort of manic pixie, like, dream boy, perhaps. And he shakes up her little schoolgirl life. And maybe at the end she pops her pen open and writes on those virginal pages. Because she has something to say.
Okay. Mm. Well, thank you, Sean.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh. Okay. Sanj, what do you think Empty Diary is about?
Mm. Okay, I'm going to steal Sean's insight just so that he doesn't get a point. so that I don't also get one.
She's a schemer. She's a bit of a Jade Fox over here.
Jade Fox over here. It's a short film.
Jade Fox coded.
I think it's set after the Cultural Revolution in China. And a young girl, I agree, finds an empty diary among her grandmother's things, who has recently died and was kind of this symbol of life in China before the revolution for her. And then I think it like intersperses like between their two lives and kind of reveals the story of like why the grandma never actually wrote in the diary. Like it only has like her name and like the first date on the first page, but there's nothing else. And yeah, there's a whole mysterious backstory.
Oh my God.
Okay. No points today. Y'all were correct. Y'all were correct about the shorts, but I think I said I had to do that earlier.
Maybe.
So,
well, I don't. Thank goodness for Sean.
I'm pretty sure I brought that up.
Come for my deduction skills, sir.
Part two. You guys had like bits and pieces of this. I will fully, like, I have a short paragraph on IMDb. I think it's a poor translation, and I actually do not know what this fully is about. But I think that it's a horror film, and it's sort of a situation where, like, in 1968, there is a person who I will say unalives themselves and leaves behind this diary, and then is found later in 2015, and a girl who is written in here is a shining star, befriends a written in here marginal girl, and the two of them and the two of them have happenings with this diary, and I believe to a sinister extent. I could find no trailer, no clip, no image, no nothing. But I did have this very vague and poorly written summary.
Interact with
the mysterious.
What's that?
What extent did you say? You said a chilling, like, word.
It seems like it's a horror movie, and that one of them has the diary and can use it for nefarious things.
Okay. Well,
scary. It would seem. You guys, thank you for playing the game.
Thank you.
That's totally well thought out and put together.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much. Okay. Back to CTHD. What does anyone have more to say? I think we had alluded earlier, but yeah, in the middle, there is suddenly a new character, and we're like, oh, who's he? And then we're like, remember? And then we flash back to a half hour in the desert that I was not feeling. I'm just like, why do you want your comb so much?
You guys weren't here for the enemies to lovers of it all?
I just was like, Jen, we gotta chill, babe. We have got to relax.
I kind of just felt like it was just a weird choice. I still thought it was good. Like, I didn't think it was bad or anything. It was just like, maybe we should have split this up and, like, got it bit by bit, you know? Mm. There's also the whole thing of, like, having a person be masked and the audience fully knowing what's going on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's happening here. But then for a while, there's just this mysterious bro. And you're like, why is he here? Like, what? Like, what is the deal? Anyway, so I think if it wasn't just like one big, long, weird flashback, that would have been better. I don't know.
Mm. And it just like she kept getting him and then he kept tying her up and then she kept getting out and assaulting him. And then him getting her back and tying her up. It was very Marianne in the Rain. I was like, this could have happened like once. And then they could have found a bit of a middle ground or an understanding. But
so I think the power wrestling was a point. Because I think it's like part of the love story between Lo and Jen. Is like he loves her because she's so like fierce and powerful, and I feel like that's part of the like defining thing of her character is this like tension between this version of femininity that like her family wants, like, you know, she's like the governor's daughter, she has to make this advantageous marriage, she like she, there's that early scene between her and Michelle Yeoh's character,
oh yeah,
where she's basically like, I wish I was a hero like you guys so that I could run away Michelle's from this life and like make things happen.
Michelle's like, bruh, it's not all it's up
yeah,
to
she's
be.
Like, girl, a lifetime of unfulfilled love, don't even. And I get it. And we'll talk about the end. But
well, we have to talk about the end because we're coming to
yeah.
We get into it.
It's such a happy ending. What are we talking about?
Guys, I was like, okay, I have like a half hour of the movie left. I'm gonna save it and watch it tomorrow night when I'm like fresh eyed and I can really focus. Absolutely emotionally distraught.
Yeah.
So just, but like, were you caught off guard by the death?
I kind of was because I thought that Jen was going to redeem herself and get back in time with some medicine. Mm. And actually she showed back up with the medicine and they're like, oh, he's dead.
Too late.
I'm like, yeah. Oh, okay.
I would say conventional wisdom would have dictated that you also move the guy closer to the medicine. Yeah. Like they all should have just traveled and that probably would have. Yeah. But, oh no, like the whole, from the start, I was like, oh, this is never going to work out.
No, I know, Jared, but knowing that intellectually and then seeing it happen seeing Michelle Yeoh's really good acting while she's watching her lover die. And then his beautiful speech where she's like, use your last breath to meditate and like go into eternity free from this world. And he's like, actually, I beefed it by never saying I loved you, so I'm gonna correct that now. And then I wept. And then she so that happens, and then she's like, Jen,
don't Lo's do what I did
for you at Wudan Temple. Go get your man. And I was like, hey, we got the young lovers at least. It's this whole thing of like we suffer so that the next generation doesn't have to. Nope. Sad.
Why is it sad?
Well, because she also dies. Was like,
oh no, she's set free. What are you talking about? She's jumping off walls and like,
yeah, no, she's not. What do you mean she's set free? Like she's set free. Like she's set free from this mortal coil.
Yeah, she literally like jumped across. You think that's gonna take her down?
Yes.
After all the stuff we've seen,
I guess I did think that because it was going to kill.
Because why else would she be? Because what? I don't know. I don't. Maybe it's ambiguous. I'm looking at the ending.
I took it from that she was like, no matter what I do on this physical world, it's all going to suck. Let me out.
Yeah, that's but what I took as well.
She won. What are we talking
and
about?
And then she, oh, I thought it was her, because it was this whole, that whole thing of like, he told her the story of the guy who jumped off the mountain to save his parents, because it was that whole thing of like, if you have pure faith, then, and you jump off this mountain and make a wish, then you'll be rewarded. So, and especially because she says to him, make a wish. And then he says, I wish we were back in the desert
in
together.
The desert.
So that's not the wish of a man who was like, yep, this is working out.
Well, they could have gone back. The end of the Wikipedia just says, Jen leaps from the bridge, falling into the mists below. Mm-hmm. And I fully assumed she was wholly in control of that landing and stuck it and was just like free.
Her ponytail turned into a helicopter rotor.
Did you guys not watch the way she scaled trees with ease?
No, I know that she could stand on a bow, but
I think it was fine. I think she's cool.
I think she was like, check you guys later.
I think if they had drones back then, it would have followed down. And yeah.
Aang said, well, screw your Western expectation of a happy ending. Here's this.
I guess it's open-ended.
I respect it, but I don't have to like it.
It's open-ended. People can interpret, I guess. Mm. You guys, I'm sorry to cut off this discussion, but we have to move on.
We have to.
Mm-hmm.
We have to jump another 5 years in the future, fly off 5 years later to a little film called Brokeback Mountain.
Well, luckily this one has a happy ending.
Yeah, this one ends great.
Luckily this one really soothed me.
You guys, you got to know this one, I'm sure. It was the butt of the joke for 2 years.
I think it's still.
It was the Bareback Mountain. It was the Fudgepack Mountain. It was everything.
It really took me back, actually, thinking back to that time and just being like, oh, yeah, things are very bad now. And also, they were so explicitly homophobic and bad in our childhood.
And it's crazy because this film is just like a real beautiful love story. And it's like,
yeah,
y'all really put a lot on this. Sorry.
Like, missed the point, very much.
So basically, two young cowboys go to take a job, guess where? On Brokeback Mountain. And they are like, this is the weirdest summer job. They're like guarding sheep for a guy for a summer so they don't lose any. And then guess what? When they're there, even though they don't speak many words, they fall in love. They have some sexy times. And then their summer is abruptly ends and they kind of spend the next, I don't know, 40 years trying to make it happen. And it doesn't really happen. And then it ends. And it's, you know, it doesn't end great. It doesn't end great for anybody.
Nope.
It's sad.
It's
so beautiful.
It's pretty damn sad, but it's really beautiful. Okay, like, I don't even know how we can get into this. I guess I want to talk performances because I think what I've loved about even reading stuff about this later is that Heath especially and Jake never really did make it as big a joke, even though everyone was like begging for them to make it a joke. Like Heath was like, these are real people. This was real acting that I did.
Right.
And he's actually completely slayed. And I don't know. I guess I just was like, even though it's the lowest bar ever, I'm like, he never really leaned into being like, yeah, it was so weird what I had to do, but I did it.
Yeah. Yeah, because I don't think they could have made the movie that they made if that's how they felt. Like, yeah.
Well, yeah, and like, well, I think the big thing that's missed is that, like, it is a love story, and that's fine. But I don't think it's actually a love story. I think it's just like two lost people figured a thing out and then couldn't keep it going, and like, I think that. I think that all the jokes and stuff kind of like made that too much of the focus because there's so much more going on.
Yeah.
Right. And it is just about like people who the thing that's the most different about Brokeback Mountain is that these two particular gentlemen do not know how to deal with what they have. They like that's the big difference. And that like they kind of understand what they're supposed to do. However, they're miserable.
Yeah,
because their lives are pretty miserable. Like,
which
you know,
I would say like is actually the through line with his other films. Not the difference.
You think so?
Yeah, that kind of like repression, like not really being sure how to like kind of navigate the social position that you're in, like that kind of thing.
But no, I feel like all the other characters like like, they don't like it, but they're aware of, like, what they have to do to be responsible or be proper or be, you know, like, it's just like, oh, like, you know, I can't be the fun sister. I have to be the reserved one. So I'll just, like, take all these hits or whatever. Or in the case of Crouching Tiger, everyone knows what they're supposed to do except for one lady. You know, like, that thing. Mm-hmm. But these two men are just purely lost.
Mm-hmm. Okay, interesting.
Yeah, and I think, like, a part of, like, it might be the saddest movie ever.
Yeah.
And a part of it is, like, the fact that they can't be together, but there is just, like, a ton of stuff packed onto it with their wives and with their lot. Like, there's just, it's just crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah, I was really, like, taken, I was at the time, and I still am, as Heath. His performance is so good. The way that he speaks so haltingly and just like it's like pulling teeth to get anything out of him. But it's so, I don't know, it's just like such a great character. And even as so the thing about this film is it's sprawling. It's like takes place over, you know, 40 years or whatever. They become old men, but they're actually beautiful 25-year-old men. Yeah. But, and the way that, like, you know, children are growing up, they're approaching the same age as them. but the way that Heath will just, like, he in particular, like, moved his body in a way that was like, oh, this body's busted. He is an aging cowboy. Yeah. Like, his mobility and his faculties are failing. I was just like, man, you really went off on this.
Yeah.
And it lost to Crash.
Oh, in an
Oscar controversy.
Oh my god,
that's true.
The green book of it all.
Mm-hmm.
It's Crash is more commercial. Like that's it. That was it. That was all.
Well, and like that pinnacle of like quote unquote like race movies. You know, like it's that like thinks it's doing social commentary, but actually probably set us back. But anyway.
I know that we're talking about how like good it is, but I also wanted to talk about how some parts that I found quite funny. And that I thought that Michelle Williams' character, she was nominated for Best Actress, but I don't know why I found her extremely funny. All of her situations. Like, just like, you know, she's like, 2 seconds after those guys meet up again, she's like, doo-doo-doo, walks out a door, sees them completely on the way to Bone Town, like, in moments. And just, like, I don't know why it didn't affect me as, like, oh, no, poor Michelle. I was like, I read it as a very comedic moment.
That's interesting.
I don't know why. I started laughing at that part. And then there's another part where she does her big monologue, probably her Oscar monologue. And she's like, you know, I put the note in your fishing pole and I said, bring us back some fish, Ennis, and you never did. But then came there's a part, dry. Came back dry every time. And then she was like, Jack Twist, Jack Nasty.
Yeah, that one did make me laugh.
That is so, and her delivering it so dramatically. And it's like, what a silly thing. And also, friend of the show, Carly, said that a girlfriend of hers in high school did that monologue for, like, a drama class or something, which is so funny of a like, 16-year-old girly to be doing.
That's very slight.
That's a crazy choice.
When Ennis gets in that fight with those dudes, and he just completely roundhouse kicks a guy, like, above the shoulders to the face, like out of nowhere.
That was such a karate kick,
like,
too.
John like, Wick, just like, what? How did you know how to do that?
It made no sense.
As Michelle's just juggling two babies and just like, oh, yeah. Ennis. Yeah. It's
But I do think, like, again, just sort of looking at his whole list of films, like, Brokeback is kind of this like culmination of like, it's very beautiful.
Mm.
It's, you know, it's very well paced. It is, it's like
the soundtrack,
like, kind of like, 100%. It's just, like, the score, all these parts very well thought out.
Yeah.
And, I feel like on a scene to scene basis, either of the leads of this either have it or lost it. And I don't know. I feel like
you think they fumbled. Jake
Gyllenhaal, I feel like Jake Gyllenhaal's like performance gets way better over the course of the whole. And a part of it is like I just enjoyed his character more as he like became this like middle-aged confident dude.
Mm.
And then Sean, I know you really liked Heath Ledger's like line delivery and stuff, but a few times I was just like, huh? What?
I
had to rewind it and like actually like subtitle it and like
I feel like so that's very that dude. It's like sorry. Yeah. What
it's too far. It's too far. No, unless you're gonna have characters perfect. Ask no.
That's more no, no.
Yeah, because he's literally like at a distance from other people. Like even like he's so unable to relate to the people around him, even on this like basic verbal level.
Right. It makes sense to Sanj, me. He's saying something very important right now, and I need to know what that is.
That's Aang for you. Aang's like, sorry, that's the emotional reality of this character. I don't care about your dang Western expectations about being able to hear the people talk.
Dangly.
About understanding what's happening.
Yeah.
Dangly.
He's like, you'll figure it. Dangly.
Got us with that one.
Maybe. But, yeah, no, that's fair. Some very tense moments, though. Like, I feel like the lows of Heath Ledger's performance aren't that low, and the highs are super high. Like the scene at the end with the parents.
Yeah.
You know, like that was so well done, and it very much reminded me of like the earlier films where like he's just letting the tension do the talking.
And he doesn't say a damn word through basically that whole thing.
Yeah. And then, you know, he finds the shirts, which is like the cowboy equivalent of like being married, I guess. And so it's so rough.
They
it's
got
crazy.
Cowboy married. I know.
Yeah, and I forgot how it ended.
I was just like, yeah. And then he could it made him throw the smallest bone to his daughter, who are obsessed with him. And he's like, you know what? I will come to your wedding. And it's like, sorry, sir. That's the bottom of the barrel. But
no, but he okay, was like, thank trying, you. But with her by the end, like he was trying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What happened to Jack made him try.
Yeah. Well, and you know he doesn't want his children to like live the sad life he did. Yeah. Right.
Even where like the way that these closeted 70s cowboys are getting action left and right.
I know.
They have such a vibrant sex life.
What's his name from Stranger Things? David Harbour.
Oh, I'll tell you what he's doing here. Ditching Anna Faris and going to the cabin.
Going to the cabin. Gonna build a little cabin on the land.
Also, as an aside, I think that Anne Hathaway, a 23-year-old Anne Hathaway, was way too young to be.
Yep.
You know, suddenly a 60, 50-year-old cowboy lady. It was very, like, Anne's in a costume. Anne's doing a little play here.
Anne just finished theater school. She's ready. Yeah.
Weren't they all just supposed to be, like, 40?
By the end, I feel like they were, like, at least 50.
Yeah.
But no, like, Jack died when he was 40.
Well, did he?
They say that.
Well, just that Kate Mara was Heath's daughter, and by the end she was at least 20. Maybe you're right. Yeah.
She's 19. Yeah. Anyway, but I do think like this is the whole thing where I just feel like if they had Gemini Man technology, that would have worked, but also maybe it wouldn't have. You know,
the Irishman of it all.
I did just rewatch it, so.
No, why? Jeremy, you're one precious human life. It's so short. Why would you use it that way? Says the girl who watches the most useless things.
Okay, well, do we have any final pins in the three Oscar-y Ang Lee films?
I will say, you guys will disagree, and that is okay.
What are you going to say?
From like Sense and Sensibility is such a high point. There was nowhere to go but down.
Whoa.
And like I'm not saying it's a big dip, but maybe, I don't know, maybe, well, I was just prepared to hate it so much, or like, you know, but I just thought it was so, like, it's almost like a demo reel of, like, everything these people are capable of, because it's just so diverse, and, like, there's so much going on, and, like, it's so tight.
It's and pretty, like, crazy,
yeah, and, like, at the end, it was kind of like one of those situations where I was just, like, I thought it was 40 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, like, I was just, like, oh. Like,
that was so shook by that.
A completely solid. It was so good, though. Like, it's, like... And I can't believe people are all over Pride. I'm mad at Miss Babbage a little bit for making me read Pride and Prejudice and not Sense and Sensibility.
Because this, who's Miss Babbage?
She's my English teacher in high school. She's a really dynamite lady.
I didn't ask to be dragged into this chat. Okay.
Some of the picks that we had to deal with, you guys. Oh, God. It still hurts.
I hope that she's not listening.
She might listen. I do appreciate her to the moon, and she's such a good educator. However,
it's a common mistake. It's a common mistake. Good three films, Aang. That's my hot take.
Seriously, it's like, what was in the water this decade, Aang?
He cooked.
Went on it. But then he uncooks. Well, then he burns it, I guess. We'll see. Next week we're doing our finale of our Aang March calmness, and I don't know, are we going to do the worst, the wild cards?
Yeah, we haven't decided yet.
It's all over the place.
We'll see.
But I'm excited to see what happens.
Me too.
We'd like to thank Saskatoon's The Garys for letting us use their song Manitouna for our theme song. We'd like to thank everyone here at CJTR and all of you at home for lending us your ears. We're broadcast Wednesdays at 6, Fridays at 3, and are available as a podcast on Spotify, Apple Play, and everywhere else podcasts are played. We're on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, so give us a follow and have a good night.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye.